You're listening to Swamp Things Talk, Florida Gators podcast with Orlando Sentinel's Edgar Thompson. Get the latest take on everything Florida with the guy who knows the Gators as well as anyone. And now, on with the show.
And welcome to another edition of Swamp Things Podcast. I'm Brant Parsons with our Florida Gators beat writer, Edgar Thompson. And he's been a little busy, as you might imagine, since Saturday in Jacksonville. Of course, the letting go of Florida coach Jim McElwain, the appointing of interim coach Randy Shannon, and everything that comes with that. Edgar, we don't even need to talk about the Georgia game. I don't think anybody wants to hear much about it anyway.
What's there to say?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it was. But just I want to just start this podcast off and just kind of get the vantage point, the timeline from how it went for you and just how this all came about. Starting, I guess, probably leading into the game when some stuff started to come out.
Well, the whole mess started 8 days ago with Jim McElwain's stunning revelation, slip of the tongue, whatever it was, fabrication, embellishment. We still just don't know the whole depth of really what went down with his death threats revelation. Because that just started the wheels rolling on this thing. It's amazing to how quickly this whole thing went sideways, man. I mean, Jim McElwain, clearly the season was not going the right way. Fans were unhappy. The suspensions were a black eye. A lot of injuries. Poor offense once again. I mean, there was no traction at all. But then he basically just knocked the legs right out from under himself with that. I keep calling it revelation, but I just don't even know what it was. I mean, because I don't know if the administration, based on its reaction, really believes that this may have ever happened, that he's just so under pressure, he's so frustrated, you know, he feels like he's being attacked in his family and his coaches and his players from all angles, but feeling attacked on social media and stuff is not receiving death threats. And when asked to produce, you know, evidence of this, he declined, refused, whatever. And he just doubled down, really. And it was the ultimate act of hubris, which I do think Jim McElwain does have, you know, this kind of arrogance and air about him that did rub a lot of people the wrong way. I was fine with the guy. I mean, yes, he was vague and sometimes a little arrogant to the media, but a lot of coaches are that. But you can't do that with your fellow employees, coaches, and certainly not with your superiors. And I think there was a lot of tension in that building, and he basically handed them a card to play, and they played it because he's out, and it's stunning, really. I mean, I'm finally kind of accepting it. I'm sure it's going to take him a long while to kind of accept what really happened, too. And so, yeah, and it really, I guess, at the end of the week, I mean, people were speculating during the week, but as the week came to an end, I'm still thinking, you know, I mean, this is, I was maybe just in denial, man. I mean, I didn't want to cover yet another job search. I've covered a lot of these in my career, and this is my third one here with the Gators, and I had one with the Dolphins sandwiched in there in 07. So, yeah, they're no fun. They're exhausting and time-consuming. Look, this beats getting up at 5 in the morning, you know, and digging ditches or whatever, man. But this is when the job really isn't fun and you know, playing in the sandbox of life, so to speak. And it's just stressful. And it's stressful for all parties involved, UF and just, you know, it's no fun for them either. And it's expensive for them because, you know, they're paying coaches buyouts and this, that, and the other. But I will say the one thing with Jim McElwain giving the Gators this leverage cost himself a whole lot of money, and we're going to find out at some point. But if they just out and out fired him after the Georgia game, he was going to get $12.9 million, and he's not getting close to that now. And there is actually one report saying he's going to get $4 million, but $3 million of that going to CSU. So this man cost himself potentially millions and millions of dollars with this slip of the tongue or whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, we kind of could tell Saturday after the game that Jim McElwain was in a total state of resignation, that he was pretty much going to be ousted the next day, and that's what went down.
And I think you touched upon something that maybe those away from the program weren't aware of or didn't see, but he always had that arrogance since he got here. He put down the facilities when he got there. He kind of rubbed people the wrong way. And if you're Nick Saban and your team has won, you know, 50 national titles in the last 50 years, you maybe can get away with that. But when you come into a program, immediately kind of start rubbing them the wrong way, then you don't see the production on the field. You can kind of see where, you know, maybe this kind of this action that he did, you know, in the death threats, and that's kind of like a final straw. But maybe there isn't a final straw needed if he doesn't act like this since the moment he gets there, or conversely, they're an extremely talented team and a winning team, and you kind of overlook those things. And he didn't have either of those things going for him. He didn't make friends when he got here, and he hadn't produced on the football field. I know a lot of people, maybe their first reaction was, well, you know, we won two East Division titles. You got to give him a little bit of time. I don't think this was that much about the play on the field. I'm sure that it factored into it, but I think you touched upon it. There were some other things going on here, and when he opened that door, I think they just felt that they needed to go through it because that was their opening. And you talked about the buyout because he did this and these actions. Maybe they needed to get on it right now so they could not get stuck by that big buyout, because this wasn't just about X's and O's when it all comes down to it.
Well, that's what Scott Strickland said. This was more than wins and losses. And then he said, I'll leave it at that, to his, you know, and that's the classy thing to do. And I don't know that he's even, because of the settlement, allowed to talk about what the deal is, right? I mean, right. These settlements are ironclad. You know, there's gag orders and things attached, or if that's what you would call it, a gag order. I'm not sure that's the legal term. But yes, he, you know, he comes in, he gets an IPF immediately. Now, that was kind of in the works, though. And then he's still complaining about facilities. They do need a standalone here. Mississippi State has one, which is where Strickland came from. The new facilities guy, Laird Veach, whom I wrote a feature on a couple of weeks ago, he comes from Kansas State. Good program, but you know, it's not Florida. And they have a $60 million standalone that he helped, you know, raise funds for and get built there. So you have schools like that with these, you know, football-only facilities going, and Florida doesn't have one yet. So Florida's facilities are lagging and need to improve. But you don't need to tweak your administration in front of the cameras about this stuff. This is stuff that you discuss behind closed doors. Look, if I have an issue about my salary, for example, or, you know, I want to, you know, whatever, stay at this hotel or whatever little picayune things we have with travel or whatever, you talk about that with your boss. You don't go on Twitter and go, God, yeah, I'm staying in another dump, another long work day, you know, underpaid. I mean, right? I mean, it's just like, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. And he just, but he felt like, I use the example with someone. I've done a number of radio interviews, as you can imagine. People come out of the woodwork, you know. I mean, I've known all three time zones today, I think. And it's like, I was saying, look, if I were hanging out with Mark Wahlberg, I might be left-handed, and that's about the only similarity Mark Wahlberg and I have. I mean, it's like, I don't think people are going to mistake me for him. And you coach with Nick Saban, it doesn't mean you're Nick Saban. And Will Muschamp fell into some of that himself when he came here to Florida. There was a kind of an error about him, but the difference was he was that way with the media, maybe, but he was never that way with the people over there in that building who love Will Muschamp to this day. When he was fired, it was like a wake or something. I mean, people were getting up and speaking reverentially about him, and the president and the AD, and then Muschamp came up and owned it and just killed the press conference. Jim McElwain will never speak to us again here as a media. And I don't think they even wanted him out in the front of the camera ever again after what he did a week earlier. He had to speak after the Georgia game. But I think they were like, this guy is not representing us anymore going forward.
And that's part of how Will Muschamp has another job that quickly at a high-end program. Because even if you don't have the results maybe you want on the field, if you carry yourself in the right way, you keep the people that hire happy, and they'll help you. And certainly,
don't be surprised if McElwain ends up with another job.
But it's not going to be an SEC school, though. I mean, he's not going to be coaching in the SEC in 2 weeks or two years.
No, and it might be Oregon State. People think that that's a fit. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Oregon State feels like that works. I'm not pulling for Jim McElwain not to get a job. The man treated me very well. We had a lot of rapport, banter. He couldn't have been nicer to me. No issue with him. In fact, there's a little just kind of touch of melancholy a little bit when I was thinking about it last night. It was kind of like, you know, this guy really is gone, because I was writing about him saying goodbye to his players and one of them remembering his sense of humor. He was funny. He was clever. But you know, you can't get by, you know, just on your wits and your, you know, quick tongue. I mean, you gotta for one produce, which he didn't do, but you know, you can't just keep everything so surface. You know what I mean? You can't have a real relationship with people just keeping everything so surface. And he operated completely on the surface most of the time with us and seemingly without others.
Now, I know we have you between radio interviews here.
That's fine.
But let's look forward, at least short term. Randy Shannon takes over as the interim coach. He has experience being a head coach, of course, when he was down in Coral Gables coaching at University of Miami. What do we watch for? What are we looking for? What do we expect of this team just the rest of the way this year? I know everybody wants to know about who's coming in and who could be the next coach. And I'm going to ask you that question, but that's all speculation. What we do know right now is that there are still football games to be played, still winnable games to be played. All four of the games that remain are winnable for the Gators. What are we looking for under Coach Shannon now over the next month?
Well, it's going to be interesting just from an analytical perspective of the program to see how the team performs without Jim McElwain. I mean, right? They likely are going to make a quarterback change. I am thinking that Malik Zaire is going to start this week at Missouri. I mean, he looked good in the series. He led the touchdown against Georgia, but he was going against, what, third stringers probably at that point, who didn't really care, even though they did want to preserve the shutout. Kirby Smart, in fact, was angry they didn't preserve the shutout, which would have been the first since 1982 when Herschel Walker was playing for Georgia. So
it would have been the first for the Gators in almost as long, because, of course, people know they have the NCAA record for consecutive games scoring points in, which they just broke and reset earlier this year. They surpassed the mark that was held by Michigan a couple games ago.
I forgot about that. Yeah, well, no, the point is, so we'll see. I mean, maybe this team, you know, plays with more energy. Maybe the offense is better under Zaire. I mean, can you imagine you put Zaire in, who everyone thought was going to be the guy anyway and then never was, and the word is that McElwain wanted to stick with Franks. He wanted to keep developing Franks, and maybe there was some resistance to that, and there was a Zaire camp too. But we'll see. What if they look really good under Zaire? What if they win a few of these last games? They have four to go. All of them are winnable. At Missouri, out South Carolina, UAB is a definite win. And then Florida State has not looked good at all. So, God, what if the Gators won four games in a row? I'm not saying it's going to happen. That would be interesting. Randy's just going to create more competition. He's going to allow certain guys. He switches things up on defense a lot. You see the lineups are shifting continually, especially at the positions with depth like defensive end and things. So he likes to create competition on the team. I mean, he's going to keep developing guys, and he's got to, you know, keep recruiting too. I mean, he seems like he's a loyal foot soldier, and he's going to do what needs to be done. I don't think there's any chance that he can parlay this into the job. I mean, I don't think he thinks that either, probably, but he might be able to parlay it into a role on the next staff. He's a very good recruiter. He's a great linebackers coach. I mean, his track record speaks for itself. I mean, he developed Ray Lewis and a million other great defensive players. So I don't know. I mean, he's somewhat auditioning maybe for a job on the next staff. But, you know, these games will be intriguing to see how the team plays without Jim McElwain. Bottom line, wants to get to a bowl game. Those 15 practices are very important for development, especially for young players. And, you know, it would also, I mean, give fans at least a decent taste in their mouths, you know, after what's been a really disappointing season on the field.
And then before you go, let's throw some names out there, maybe some ideas. We got this. We're good. But I wanted to make sure that we got in and talk about maybe some of the guys that we may hear on a short list or where you think they might be looking to bring the next guy in. Do they wait for a head coach that's out there at an FCS school, or is it a coordinator thing, or do we not really have an idea yet what direction they may want to go with this?
It's going to be like getting, you know, Fort Knox over there, and nothing's getting out. But there's going to be tons of speculation, and there are people, obviously, that have longer-standing relationships with, let's say, Jimmy Sexton, for example. I've known Jimmy a long time, but I don't, like, deal with him every year like some of these national guys do. Or Scott Strickland, the AD. I mean, he's known some of these national writers for 20 years, right? So there might be some things percolating, I'll say, and I'm not saying that I have no chance to get any of them, but there's going to be some information, but I wouldn't trust much of it. But there is obviously certain names that are out there. One thing as a precursor to all this, though, before I start, is the good news for Florida. There are a couple things. One, they're already don't have a coach. Nebraska, UCLA, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Arkansas, among others, might not have coaches either in a short order. But the Gators now officially don't have a coach, so they can get working on this, right? That's right. One good thing. Secondly, the pool is much more impressive than it was in 2014 when Will Muschamp was let go. Back then, it was like there really weren't that many great candidates. Right now, it's a robust list of good candidates with offensive backgrounds. And, you know, I say the safe option would be Dan Mullen from Mississippi State. The guy has done well in the SEC at one of the tougher jobs, if not the toughest job at Mississippi State, and had that team to number one even with Dak Prescott. He has a track record of developing quarterbacks at all his stops, from Bowling Green to Utah with Alex Smith to Tim Tebow at Florida, you know, getting Chris Leake a national championship or helping him. Developing and Dak Prescott, Nick Fitzgerald is a very good quarterback right now. They're 6-2. I mean, he's done a hell of a job, Dan Mullen. Plus, he knows the SEC, man. That was one thing Jim McElwain, you know, kind of bragged about when he got, well, I've been in these stadiums. I know what it's like. Yeah, you sat behind plexiglass and called plays for 4 years. You weren't on the sideline with the headset on, calling timeouts, managing clock, dealing with this, dealing with that. That was evident. I mean, his timeout management a few times this year was abysmal. Dan Mullen's done it for 9 years in the cauldron. Plus, he knows Gator Nation. A lot of selling points there. The guy everybody wants is Scott Frost. Everybody knows that Scott Frost is maybe the hottest commodity among young coaches out there. And does he want to leave UCF already? I don't know. I mean, what a turnaround he's done down there. Number one scoring team in the nation, 7-0 after going 0-12 2 years ago. Nebraska could come open. Does he want to go back there where he won a national title as a quarterback? He is definitely a guy who's got to be on the short list. Chip Kelly's name has emerged. He always does. I don't see it, but maybe. And I'll say this, Scott Strickland did hire Ben Howland at Mississippi State as his men's basketball coach in 2015. Which kind of fits the profile of Chip Kelly. You know, a guy who won big at another program, had some kind of, you know, percolating things going on. I mean, Chip Kelly's more than percolating. I mean, the guy got nailed with a show cause. I mean, got in trouble for recruiting violations. I just don't know that. And will he connect with the fan base? I don't think they care if he connects with the media, which he certainly probably won't. But the fan base, I mean, is Chip Kelly really going to do that? I mean, he's not a warm and fuzzy guy. You know, the name that's emerged in the last 24 hours, 48 hours, surprisingly, and I won't dispel it, though I don't see it, is Willie Taggart, the former USF coach who's now at Oregon in his first year. Doing a good job there. He could recruit lights out here. But I tell you, I remember Willie Taggart's tenure at USF, which obviously inherited a much tougher situation than inherited Florida. But relative to the SEC, this is going to be a tough deal. I mean, to get this thing back, you know, I mean, Georgia's, you know, really trending, going in a, you know, light years ahead of this program. It's shooting away. And there's, you know, South Carolina's improving, et cetera, et cetera. I don't need to list the whole SEC off. But is Taggart, you know, can he come here like he did at USF and have some growing pains, which he suffered there, have a bad year or so? And fans are, they want someone to come in here and make hay quickly, not like, yeah, we need an adjustment period. And I don't know if Taggart is going to fit the bill, though. The fact that I'm kind of rolling him out means he'll probably be introduced as coach in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then, you know, there are other guys. Matt Campbell, the Iowa State guy, he fits the profile of the next Urban Meyer to me. 6 years already as a head coach, 3 9-win seasons at Toledo, 30, you know, he's kicking butt at Iowa State 2 years in. He already has 2 top 5 wins in 3 weeks. I mean, they're back in the top 25 for the first time since 2005, but he has a buyout of $9.5 million roughly, and I don't think that's something they want to take on. Same with Joseph Fuente at Virginia Tech, has a $6 million buyout, and or Justin, excuse me, and he's been there, what, 2 years? So does he really want to leave? And last guy, Memphis coach Mike Norvell, is very intriguing. 36 years old, has a successful record as a coordinator, best known at Arizona State for that. And then now he's at Memphis and really doing a great job taking over for Fuente. And he's 2 years in there and might be looking to make a move. So, and there are other names, man. I mean, I can keep going. I mean, Chad Morse at SMU, I like him a lot, but he's a Texas guy. He went to Texas A&M. If that job were to open, I mean, he would want that, I would think. So, and, you know, I don't know if you have a few to throw in the mix, because you know college football overall better than I do, and I'm kind of curious who you think elsewise.
I mean, you touched upon the two that stand out to me, obviously Scott Frost and Matt Campbell up at Iowa State, just what he's been able to do with the Cyclones. He's obviously the up-and-coming coach. You have to think that, you know, like with Urban, that the next step is a big school like Florida. And, you know, Dan Mullen seems like the fit, but he always seems like the fit, and it's never happened. I don't know if this is the time it does. Chad Kelly, to me, I think his job right now, or Chip Kelly, his job is just to be the guy that people name when coaching jobs open. I don't see him getting anything more than, but they certainly gets named for all of them. But I think you touched upon the big names. I think you also, the thing you pointed out, which I think is key here too, is there's almost an embarrassment of riches. You would think of guys that are capable, you know, that are available that could come here. So I think that it'll be a tough choice, but I think that there'll be a few that you'll be able to look at and say, you know, I'm saying, you know, the Florida administration, they'll be able to look at and be happy if they get them, because I don't think that you're going to be trying to find a diamond in the rough. There's a lot of really good names out there, and if, you know, if they're willing to move, I think they would be good choices. I don't know about Scott Frost. You know, we follow him a lot here in Orlando, and what he's done at UCF, I think in part is probably some of the frustration that Florida fans saw, because they went from 0-12 to, you know, he's got a great quarterback who has a high pass efficiency rating, and they're scoring points by the buckets. I don't know. I always felt that Nebraska was next for him, but, you know, the Florida job would be interesting. But I think that Matt Campbell is probably the guy that I see most on the most wanted list, but then the ties that Mullen have, you always have to have him in the mix. So those are the two that I'm looking at. It's the buyouts.
That buyout's tough, though, because this is a school that's going to be on the hook for, you know, they're still paying Muschamp and stuff. But if the reporting of Brett McMurphy, who I have no reason not to trust because he's one of the best there is, plugged in, is right, and they get out for $4 million of, you know, with McElwain, and three of that goes to CSU, then they can manage it much more easily. But still, $9 million buyout, man.
It's a lot.
That would scare you off.
But if you think about it, they've had two whiffs now at coaching, and you can't afford a third. And so you got to have the right guy. Three out of four
have been whiffs. I mean, Zook was a whiff.
Yeah.
Look, so, Jeremy Foley, for all the amazing things he did, and I mean, if he listens to this podcast, which he probably won't, he's not going to like this. But, man, that guy can hire everything but a football coach, because I don't even give him Urban Meyer. I mean, Urban Meyer, I give him half. Because if Bernie Matchin won here, Urban Meyer wasn't coming here. They had a longstanding relationship from Utah, or not longstanding, a couple of years, but the Wives are like great friends and rode horses together and all this, and that made it a good fit for Urban. But, yeah, man, I just don't think – I mean, they cannot blow another football hire, man. You blow another football hire, and, I mean, that might be the end of Scott Strickland. I mean, people's impatience is at a fever pitch. We say it. I mean, 34 games, and Jim McElwain's gone. Who would have ever thought that?
It's crazy. Well, Edgar, get some rest when you can. And
no, I'm good, man.
Keep us posted.
You got five kids, buddy. It's Halloween. You need to get rest.
I'm trying. I'm going to sleep some point in November, I think. But on that note, have a good rest of your Halloween. And we will be coming to you again soon with another podcast, possibly one looking ahead to this weekend. And, of course, as news warrants. So for Edgar Thompson, I'm Brant Parsons. Thanks for listening to the Swamp Things podcast. Rate us, subscribe to us, share us on social media, and make sure you listen next time we come around.
Thank you for listening to Swamp Things Talk, your Florida Gators podcast. For more Gators coverage, visit OrlandoSentinel.com. Subscribe to this podcast, share it on social media, and review it on iTunes. We'll see you next time.